I want to tell you about a new podcast called Amuse News. Publishing multiple days a week, Amuse News is your source for food news, interviews from around the food world, and more. On the show, we'll be engaging with food storytellers, from chefs to advocates to people working in the field, and many more. Find Amuse News wherever you get your podcasts. Amuse News is a destination for everyone who's looking for a new, insightful look into the world of food.
This episode is brought to you by Wisconsin Cheese. The great state of Wisconsin is home to the only master cheesemaking program outside of Switzerland. Learn more about Wisconsin's cheesemaking history at wisconsincheese.com.
This week on Meat and Three, we're telling the stories behind iconic dishes. We learn what it will take to save New York's most famous egg cream, discover the importance of the goat neck in the East Village, and take a trip to India for delicious flatbreads.
Our customers who come in to get egg creams and t-shirts, they love to talk about their childhood or their teenage years or their college years.
I was living in Nepal, in northern India, and out there there's a real famous dish, a classic dish, I should say, is called paya.
Parathe wali gali, or as it awkwardly translates in English, the lane of the stuffed flatbread makers, is probably one of the most popular food streets in Old Delhi.
Tune in to Meat and Three, HRN's weekly food news roundup, wherever you listen to podcasts.
Hello and welcome to Snacky Tunes. I am one half your host, Darren Bresnitz. This week, we are super excited to be sitting down with LA Times columnist and host of LA Times' new food show, Off Menu. In each episode, Lucas Kwan Peterson traverses across LA to hang out with some of the food people who make this city fantastic. He will cook in their kitchens, get to know their stories, go shopping with them, and give us a little insight of what it means to be a chef, restaurateur, and just overall delicious citizen of this city. We also dip into our archives and pull out a performance from LA born and bred singer Billy Womo, which we recorded live at Dangerbird Record Studios. So sit back, relax, and enjoy Snacky Tunes on heritageradionetwork.org.
We talk about food, we talk about music, with musical dudes, finger on the pulse, Snacky Tunes.
Together, alone together. Do you wanna be alone together? Yeah. not home for such a long time.
Snacky Tunes. I am one half your host, Darren Bresnitz. We are with Lucas Kwan Peterson, columnist for LA Times and host of Off Menu, which debuted almost 2 weeks ago.
Hello.
Hello, and welcome to the show.
Thank you.
So, LA Times has really made a investment and a push into food journalism in the last year with the expansion of the section into a weekly whole section and not just a piece here and there. And now you are expanding into video. So how did the show come about and why has the LA Times wanted to shift into video for food?
Oh my gosh. I don't know. I mean, and I don't know if it's a good idea. Of course, I think it's a good idea. I don't know if it's a good idea to have me doing it, but I came on board with the understanding that I would make a push into video from the show that I hosted for several years at Eater, which was called Dining on a Dime. And I think it's just an effort to really broaden and expand food coverage in the city. Our new owners, Patrick and Michelle, are both very into food. And so I think they were excited to really invest and expand the team from 4 people to 9 people and to bring back the standalone section, which we brought back in April. And I mean, as you know, sort of long gone are the days of like a 30-page food section, which, mm-hmm. you know, lots of ads and lots of, you know, from,
you know, put the kettle on.
That's what I'm
boil
saying.
Boil up some eggs Sunday morning. Let's dig in.
Just dig in. Spend the next couple hours going through the food section.
Earmarking recipes you'll never cook.
It's like, you know, yeah, filing, you know, 5,000 word pieces
sure.
on citrus or something like that. You know, those days are gone, but it's nice. It's nice to see the investment. We're very grateful. We're really trying to step it up.
So with the expansion, even though it's not the 30-page section, you still have now more space to tell stories in the printed page. But what are the stories that you thought you could only tell through video that you couldn't tell in print or that maybe you have told in print and are now revisiting with a new angle?
I mean, I think video, it just has the ability to convey certain things that are hard to grasp maybe in the space of 1,200 words. And the goal of Off Menu is to really get to know some of the people and characters that are behind some of the really great restaurants and places to eat in Los Angeles and in the Los Angeles area. So for our purposes, it's really a useful tool to really be able to dive in. And for example, in this last episode, which was with the guys from Tacos 1986, to be able to go to where these guys grew up, some childhood friends, and go to some of their favorite taco spots and really get to meet, you know, meet Joy's dad and to see their childhood homes. And a lot of those things you can really capture so well within the space of 10 to 12 minutes, which would be harder in an article.
There are also these moments in video that you could say natural or unexpected that maybe capture more emotion in a visual sense or just because you have something rolling that sometimes escape the printed word.
This is an excellent point that you have raised. There is an aspect of spontaneity to video, and the ability to sort of go off script, the ability to have a conversation go where you didn't think it was going to go, the ability to literally be in the car and say, hey, I wonder what's down that road, and to just check it out and to see what's there. And it allows, obviously, articles and stuff are edited and planned very carefully, but you're absolutely right. There's a certain spontaneity.
So being a columnist and having that, I don't want to call it rigidness, but, you know, you have X amount of words and you're trying to tell a narrative story. And now being a host, what did you want your role to be as the host? Is it guide? Is it interviewer? Is it student? Is it avatar? Is it all of them?
I do want to put blue makeup on, just like just like an avatar. But I think,
what an odd term this interview would be if it was. What are your thoughts on the future Avatar sequel?
Me and
James Cameron, just out there.
We're going to the bottom of the ocean,
man.
And
there's a great restaurant on that planet that in season two, it's weird, they take a weird pivot there.
Navi.
But I digress. What do you see your role as a host?
So my experience working at Eater and doing a show which I really liked was like host. Like, hey guys.
What's up?
Here we are. I am the host.
It's LKP. I'm coming from you. Yeah.
You know, it's your boy.
It's your boy.
Smash that like.
And
I think that's fine.
Yes.
I think there's definitely, that's definitely a thing that people like, and that's definitely something that has its use. But I think for this show, I wanted it to be a bit less hosty in the sense that, you know, a hosted show, it really revolves around the host. And so, and I didn't want it to revolve around me. I wanted it to revolve around, you know, wherever we were that day or whoever we were with that day. So I think in that sense, I'm like your friend and we're going on this thing together and we're going to talk to these people together and we're both going to learn. And I am, you know, in a position where I hopefully have some sort of authority on food or restaurants, you know, beyond maybe the average viewer, and I can help move things along, or I can you know, introduce interesting points or things about a certain culture's cuisine. But I think by and large, it is less about the host and it is more about the subjects.
There was this quote in the episode with Jazz and Jitlada where it said, every meal teaches a different lesson and it's much more than just about the food, which in many ways dovetails with what you just said, of where it is not just going, whoa, look at these donuts, or, you know, I can't believe the size of this pizza slice. And you are giving more of a journalistic, in-depth approach to it. So beyond just the food of what you're showing, which is delicious and plays well to the medium, what are you trying to tell? Like, what are the stories you're trying to share through Off Menu?
Oh, gosh. I mean, it really depends from episode to episode, but I think with the focus being on L.A., it is the overriding principle, or the overriding lesson, I would say, is love your city, love LA, you know, get to know the city and the people. And if you're not from LA, and hopefully people not from LA are also watching the show, it's like, come visit, come see us, come see what makes us great and see what makes us special. Because LA has gotten a lot of attention in recent years in food media, and which is wonderful. And we've had a lot of chefs come in and open restaurants. But I still think that's not what we're about. I still think that's not necessarily our strong point food-wise.
What is?
Well, it's places like this. And what it is it's the family-run places. It's the places where you drive, you know, 45 minutes and you go have, you know, barbecue in Corona or something like that, or you You know, you go to Little Saigon in Orange County and you just eat like the greatest, probably Vietnamese food outside of Vietnam. And it's about places that exist outside of our realm. It's about places that don't, like, frankly, that don't necessarily care about what we do in food media. They really exist outside of us. And I'm not saying that what we do isn't great and valuable, but I think so much of what makes LA special is the sprawl and are the neighborhoods and the little sort of culinary incubators that have popped up and that really make the city special.
I mean, it's true, because when I go get dumplings in the SGV, they do not care about where I work or what I do or things like that. And I sort of like that I'm not going to eat at restaurants that are, well, I read about this, so I have to go, and maybe I'm hoping that someone recognizes me, or I recognize someone there, and I see other people in the scene. Like, sometimes there's an importance of getting to know your neighbor and your neighborhood through the food they have to offer.
Absolutely. And I think it is the most effective way, and it's the most efficacious way. You know, there's nothing easier and more relatable than sitting down for a meal with someone. And it is, you know, and I say in my little opening missive about the show that it's a highly effective Trojan horse, that it's, you know, you go in under the pretense of food and a meal, and within that there are so many other issues built in, and it's so easy to talk about nearly anything when you're using food as a jumping off point.
That's a beautiful sentiment. And on that, we're gonna take a musical break. Then we're gonna come back and talk about how you narrow down that sprawl, because it is endless and delicious. We have a song from the archives here on Snacky Tunes on heritageradionetwork.org.
Trying to help you. Say you got answers, you're gonna help me soon. I know there's darkness in your heart. We're both content to play our parts. You got that advice that I like. No matter how hard I fight, you got some hold of me. And every time that I say it's the last, before I know it, I'm back. You take some hold of me right now. Oh, 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 oh. Give it all up, see, I made up my mind. But there's something in my blood that makes me cross those lines. And I know there's darkness in my heart too. But we're both content to play our parts. You got that advice that I like. No matter how hard I fight, it takes a hold of me. And every time that I say it's the last, before I know it, I'm back. It takes a hold of me right now. That I like, no matter how hard I fight, it takes a hold of me. And
every time that I say it's the last before I know it, I'm back. It takes a hold of me right now.
This episode is brought to you by Wisconsin Cheese. Did you know that 90% of Wisconsin's milk is made into cheese? And this is not just any milk. When Swiss, German, and Italian cheesemakers first settled into Wisconsin, they chose their new home because of the special terroir of the region. Its soil and water are nurtured by the goodness of glacial sediment, and those elements lend themselves to the very best milk. Today, Wisconsin produces 25% of all cheeses made in the U.S., and Wisconsin cheeses have won more awards than any other state or country in the world. How did they do it? Wisconsin cheesemakers combined their heritage and tradition with nonstop innovation. They were the first state to establish cheese grade standards and the first to require that every cheese plant be overseen by a licensed cheesemaker. Wisconsin is the only place outside of Europe where one can pursue an elite master cheesemaker certification. All of these impeccably high standards mean Wisconsin produces more than 48% of the nation's specialty cheese.
Hello and welcome back. We are here with Lucas Quan Peterson, columnist for the LA Times, host of the new show Off Menu. And it would be impossible to talk about this show without talking about the legacy of Jonathan Gold, which, you know, his inspiration, we could spend the rest of the time talking about that.
Absolutely.
On LA and the food scene and the rise to it. But this show feels like a through-line continuation of his work, even with the first episode with Jitlada, which everyone knows is one of his famous restaurants. It's in the documentary. You know, Jazz is, you know, one of his closest friends. Or what? How do I say this? There's probably both a shadow over you and, like, where you pick you can go. Of both what you feel you have to tell and then what you feel you want to tell that's new. How do you balance that and how do you decide where you want to go?
Oh boy. Well, I guess first to talk about Jonathan, which I think it's hard to talk about this show without talking about Jonathan. I would not, you know, ever presume to be stepping into what he has done or continue. It's definitely, he is an inspiration, and I could only hope to, you know, I think any of us could ever hope to live up to what he achieved. And it's, I would say it's less of a shadow. It's more of like a benevolent, like, guiding hand.
Sure. Shadow. I mean, I don't mean shadow the negative way.
No, of course.
But just like in the way that, like, the shadow is longer and can lead into a spot.
Yes. But choosing Jitlada for the first episode was a very conscious choice.
Of course.
And it was definitely a nod to Jonathan. I think what he taught us, so many things. He taught us to go to the place and eat the thing you're afraid of, and talk to the person who you may not have already talked to. And in that way, you get to love your city, and you get to love the people, and you get to know your city better, and you get to become sort of an ambassador for the city. And I think that's what Jonathan did better than anyone ever could have, was be an ambassador for LA and to really express so well in his reviews, not just, you know, being obviously a very virtuosic writer, but expressing love for the city. And I think that's what he tried to do. And so that's what I try to do in selecting the places for the episodes of the show, places that have an interesting tie to LA in some way, places that feature a cuisine that LA does particularly well, characters like Jazz, who are like civic institutions, mm-hmm. in Los Angeles, who, you know, Jazz and her glasses are like a featured player.
I'm surprised there is not a shirt yet.
Yeah.
Or, like, sweatshirt. with Jazz and the glasses.
Yeah, absolutely.
That's a free one for the next.
That'll be for merch. Yeah, yeah. We'll send that to our product people. And so yeah, just like places that are gonna, you know, rep the city and places that are ideally gonna make people who live here want to go and want to get to know their city in a more deeper way, and people who live outside the city to want to come and visit.
So where do you go beyond Jonathan's influence, which is the other part of the question, where you could honestly spend all of Off Menu just going to places that he's highlighted and telling an updated story or a different look. Mm-hmm. How do you pick places that maybe he didn't cover or have opened up since his passing? How much tied do you feel to his history versus making a new light on new spots or spots that may have not gotten any light yet?
Yeah, I mean, I think it would be well worth my time or anyone's time just to go to places that he loved. I mean, obviously, since his passing over a year ago, in a very practical way, new places open all the time. So I think in that sense, for example, Tacos 1986. Mm-hmm. Now, these guys are not from LA, but obviously the Mexican kitchen has been very influential in Los Angeles, and we owe so much to that country. And so I think by just sort of seeing the work that Jonathan did and try to sort of continue as a through line, and to just, I'm not that interested in doing something radically different. I could only aspire to pick places that Jonathan would approve of, and I would be happy doing that. And I'm not certain I want to deviate from that in any kind of like crazy way. Like,
I mean,
what he did was great.
Yeah, he set a really great parameter of why to consider a restaurant and why you would want to spend a time and energy in curating a restaurant, the people behind it, the story behind it, what it means to the city.
Yeah. And I can for with other stuff that I write or other stuff that I do, if I want to write ridiculous stories about French fries or hot Cheetos, you know, I can indulge like that sort of aspect of my personality and that sort of that kind of thing that I like to do. And, you know, for Off Menu, we can really go to some great places and get some great stories from people and really try to like dig deep and show the stories of the people that make this great food.
How have you seen LA as a character and its role in these stories shifted from maybe a couple of years ago to where it is now? Given its respect, which everyone sort of who knew about it living here about, but you know, now it's got national, even international attention. What role does it play in the show?
It's so wonderful that LA is like such a hot dining city. Like, yeah. It's like, how did that, like, when did that happen? I guess, you know, a few years ago. And there's so many places that are open. There's a part of me that's a little worried. There's a little part of me that maybe people who come here either to eat or to open a place sort of think LA is a restaurant town the way New York is a restaurant town.
It's not.
And we're not.
I mean, to your point from before, some of these restaurants do not care about any of this. And they're going to be slinging dumplings, tacos, you know, plates of food that will be there before and after should this media bubble pop.
Yeah. I do worry. I do worry that sometimes that the rate at which places are opening, especially chefy places that are sort of in our media mm-hmm. ecosystem, I worry a little bit. And I wonder sometimes if we as a dining population are of that mindset to support restaurants at this rate, the way, you know, in Manhattan, people eat out 3 meals a day. You know, you walk downstairs and you stumble outside and you go to a restaurant. And that's just not how we live. And then also to your point of, you know, the fact that when you go to a Vietnamese place in Garden Grove, it's like they're cooking for their town. They're cooking for their community. And they don't care if I come. They don't care if you come. And that's... So they do sort of exist outside of us in a very, in like a figurative and a literal way, you know, outside of our profession and outside of, you know, geographically. But again, that's what makes the food so great.
So you go into this series with an idea of the stories you want to tell and the people you want to feature and knowing background. What were one of the two things that you learned or experienced during the making of this season that surprised you and that will stay with you? Folks at home, you can't see it. Big smile on his face.
I'm thinking. This is a hard question and I need to come up with a good answer. Some things that I learned. I mean, every episode was... It was filled with lessons, both large and small. We did an episode that'll be coming out a little bit later in the series, probably at the end of November, on Skid Row. And it felt important to, as someone who's in food media and as someone who's very much a part of this cycle, to look to people who are who are in need, and people who, when you look at the homeless crisis, the homelessness crisis in LA and LA County, 60,000 homeless people in LA County, and it's getting worse. That makes it can kind of make you feel like a ridiculous human being at times, and I think it was important to have that sense of perspective and important to have that sense of humility and to work with places like Skid Row Coffee, which operates outside of the main library downtown, and Skid Row People's Market, which operates on 5th and San Pedro. Places that are doing such good work to provide healthy food options for people who are in poverty, providing vocational opportunities for those same people, and just doing such good work, and that we, you know, places that we in the media, I think, can and should do more to elevate places like that. So I learned a lot of lessons during that episode.
So when people watch the show, what would you like them to take away from an entertainment point of view, and then also maybe something a little bit more actionable?
Yeah, I think it's I mean, and like the last thing that I said about Skid Row, it's not meant to be scoldy. Like it's not meant to say, hey, you can't enjoy your meal, because I, you know, more than most people, you know, like to go out to eat and like to have you know, really delicious dinners. But it's just having a sense of your place, you know, in the city and beyond, you know, as a whole. And it's supposed to, I mean, the show is supposed to be fun. It's not supposed to be some very serious thing. I feel like I'm being like,
no.
Serious. But it's supposed to be like, it's supposed to make you want to go eat. It's supposed to make you want to get in your car and like pick a direction and drive for 45 minutes and just like stop somewhere and see what's there, you know, stop and have at the Mariscos place, or stop at the Pupuseria, or stop at the, you know, stop at the West African place and have some jollof rice, you know, stop anywhere, but just to like, you know, see the city for what it is, which is this like beautifully fractured, imperfect thing that has these incredible pockets of food. So from an entertainment point of view, it is. It's supposed to be exciting. It's supposed to make you excited to eat in the city. And then, but it is also, hopefully, going to make you think a little bit about where your food comes from, because I think we don't always do that. I think sometimes when we go to restaurants and the food appears in front of us and it's delicious or it's not or whatever, we just kind of think it. It's like when I was a kid and, you know, you just think hamburgers just you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, or bacon. And you don't, it took me, I didn't realize bacon came from a pig until I was in my 30s.
One magical animal.
Yeah, that's not true. Exactly. Just like The Simpsons. One magical animal where the pork chops and the bacon and everything comes from. So, you know, that's a very basic level.
But
to think about your food and just think like, oh, yeah, someone made this.
Yeah, and it's the food and the people behind it.
Absolutely.
Well, thank you so much. This is super exciting. I can't wait.
We're shaking hands.
And yet another thing you can't see. So before we go rewatch Avatar together, where can people watch the show? How can people follow you online?
Yes. So you can go to our brand new baby just born YouTube channel, youtube.com/LATimesFood. You can go to our show landing page, which is latimes.com/offmenu. And then or you can just search off menu.
No, you probably could do off menu LA Times.
Off menu LA Times. Yeah, we got to be around a little bit longer before
your SEOs really start jumping up.
That's right.
Well, thank you so much. Congratulations. Thank you for making another delicious love letter to LA. We have another song from the archives and then a live performance here on Snacky Tunes on heritageradionetwork.org.
Temples that I built for you, and I sang songs of praise and love. And up, I sang songs of burying you alive. And up, see, I had to tear it down.
Let's go! Join Heritage Radio Network on Monday, November 11th for a raucous feast to toast a decade of food radio. Our 10th anniversary Bacchanal is a rare gathering of your favorite chefs, mixologists, storytellers, thought leaders, and culinary masterminds. We'll salute the inductees of the newly minted HRN Hall of Fame, who embody our mission to further equity, sustainability, and deliciousness. Explore the beautiful Palm House and Yellow Magnolia Cafe, taste and imbibe to your heart's content, and bid on once-in-a-lifetime experiences and tasty gifts for any budget at our silent auction. Tickets available now at heritageradionetwork.org/gala.
Hello and welcome back to Snacky Tunes. We are sitting in the lovely and legendary Danger Bird record studio in Silver Lake, and we are with one of Silver Lake's own hometown heroes, Billy Woma. Welcome to Snacky Tunes.
Thank you.
You are one of the few born and bred and still live in Silver Lake.
Well, actually, I am born and bred.
But you moved away because people like me moved here. It's fine. You can say it.
Yeah, it's funny. Me and my girl were just having that conversation, and I was like, well, you can't. She was saying that because of people like you. And I was like, well, you know, I think growing up in LA, I've seen it so much in all the neighborhoods.
Yeah.
I'm just like numb to it. It's like people want to be together. We're weird creatures, man. Like,
yeah.
Something happens in a place, people all want to be there. Like, from a car accident on a freeway all the way to like this huge metropolis, people are just like gravitated towards like, you know, spectacles and other people. It's a thing.
Well, also, I mean, I did live in sort of the same sort of place in Brooklyn, but with LA,
where the same shit was happening.
Where the same shit was happening, yeah. But like with LA, you know, you pick where you want to live, where you want to hang, because if not, then you're in the car the whole time.
That's true. Yeah, man.
What's it been like seeing growing up? Where's your family from originally?
Well, my dad's from Chicago, but he moved to the Bronx, and that's where my mom's from as well.
Oh, yeah. Bronx. What part of the Bronx?
I don't even know, man. All I know is like I got a lot of, we're Italian and
Arthur Avenue, maybe?
That sounds familiar. Okay. You know, I used to go there more when I was a kid, but then my mom moved her parents out and they just lived with us, so we had less reason to go out there.
Arthur Avenue is the famous like Italian strip.
That sounds, I think
so my grandparents from Italy?
Yeah, from Italy.
Big food family?
Yes. Yes.
Like Sunday gravy, supper, things
dude,
like that.
Dude, every day, 6 o'clock. That's like, you know, we're big on family values, like multiple generations living in the same house. Like, you know, my grandfather taught me how to do this tight little mustache. Like,
it's a good mustache.
Thank
for
you.
For those who obviously can't see it, it's worth a Google.
It's worth Google my mustache.
Your first band was actually All in the Family, right? Or the first,
that's
the
right.
Fourth big, Babes.
Yes. Yeah, I used to be in a band with my brother and sister called Babes, and it was just my dad had taught us how to kind of play and sing and do harmonies and all that. And
what was that like?
You know,
I've never, it's like, oh, my dad taught us how to play sports or like things like that. But like teaching your kids how to harmonize, because that's not a given that your kids can even harmonize.
Right. Yeah. My sister is like, she's a sick singer. I'm okay, and my brother's not good.
Oh.
But so that's why we always like put him in the,
you
we give
that?
Him the easiest.
You hear that, bro? You hear that, bro?
He knows.
I'm on the record.
He knows, dude. He knows. Believe me, he fucking knows.
But standing next to your sister, you're like, she levels you up.
She's great. She's great. Yeah. So it's like, you know, especially with harmonies, it's kind of like, it's a team effort.
Oh,
it's
yeah.
A team effort.
Did your dad can sing, though?
Yeah, he's really good. He's really good. And
grandparents on his side?
All my grandparents sang. Like, it was a big, very, very musical family. Ooh. Very musical. Like, you know, like, okay, here's the thing. Like, we're like Italian immigrant vibes, so it's like we're not big on sports, we're big on family and music, like that's kind of, and food. Yeah, it's like, it's just like, it's like a stereotype, but real,
right?
Italian people.
So I can only imagine the holidays at your house are awesome.
Yeah, they used to be, man, but everyone's like, you know, doing their own thing and working. You know how it is, man, to live in LA, it's expensive. You gotta also like, it's not as
grind.
Yeah, plus all my grandparents are passed now. So it's like, back then it was a thing, like grandparents, aunt, my mom and dad, me and my brother, sister, always, like then inviting over other family.
So your dad teaches you how to harmonize.
Yeah.
Obviously you're younger, but as you get older, what made you want to start a band with your brother and sister? Because that is always not the recipe for less stress and success.
It definitely was not less stress at all, man. That shit is, family bands are tough. They're really hard because, like, there's a,
You can't ever really walk away.
No.
Like, you can walk away from the band.
Yeah.
But you still got to see them at Sunday at 6
totally.
p.m.
Totally. And it's like, you know, there's a level of respect that people give each other, or just leeway that people give each other when you're not that fucking tight. You know, like, you'll just let people, you let shit slide, but you might not with other people. Now go on tour with those people 24/7 who don't let shit slide. It's tough.
And are pulling up stuff from, like, you're not even starting at zero. You're starting at, like, remember when you were 8 and you ripped off my Barbie's head? Or, like, you ate the last piece of cake on my birthday? Like, they're bringing up stuff. They're like, what, dude, I'm sorry, I sat in the front seat. Like, what do you want from me?
Yeah, man. I mean, we're, you know, we're not, like, we weren't really, like, bickery. We were more, like, I don't know, dude. We're a weird family. What can I fucking say? My family is very strange. I'm sure everyone thinks their family's strange, but I don't know. I don't even know what to think at this point. I just try to gravitate away from whatever the bickering shit is, and I just want to be happy.
I hear you.
Because life is weird, man.
And short.
It's fucking short. It's really short.
What was it like writing with your brother and sister?
That's fun, man. That's just fun. Well, me and my sister, we used to write together. We got a publishing deal when, like, we were just kind of, before Babes even, we had a publishing deal, and we were writing for other people, and just, we were in the studio 24/7, and it's like, that's just fun, man. Like, the only thing that really gives me pure joy with nothing like poisonous, nothing like insidious in it, is music. For me personally, I don't know, everything else is like, comes with you know, like stipulations. It comes with, like, you know, certain things that you're gonna get this, but it's gonna take this from you. Music is the only thing that just gives pure. I mean, not the business side. The business side's fucked up.
Yeah.
That's fucked up. That's gonna kill you.
But when you're writing,
yeah, that's beautiful.
Yeah, it's beautiful.
That's the only time when I'm truly like, I feel good. I feel really good right now. Most of the time, I feel pretty bad. But, like, you know, I got some okay friends now. Nadelle, my girl, has helped me make friends, because I'm like a very
You're a lone wolf guy.
Yeah, I'm a sensitive person. And I like being alone, but now I have cool new people in my life, and that makes me happy.
Well, speaking of beautiful things and the cool people in your life,
yeah.
I know we got the band in house, and these are all cool looking people.
Yeah.
What song do you want to play for first?
Without You.
Without You? Anything behind it? You want to give a little intro?
It's just a song about when your person leaves you and you think all of these weird, it's just like the relation of when someone leaves you to what you think. It's just the thoughts in your head when you're just sitting there and you're like, wow, I'm alone now and I'm gonna have to have a new life. That's what that is.
All right, well, here we go. Billy Womo, Danger Bird Record Studios in Silver Lake on Snacky Tunes here on heritageradionetwork.org.
Thank you. That was awesome.
Yeah, it was good. Okay, I don't even know, man. I don't.
No, it's sweet.
I just be myself now. I don't even know what to fucking do.
You have the song has like a classic 50s doo-wop-y Burt Bacharach sort of vibe.
Yeah, man. Well, Bacharach's the shit, but I gotta give up to Hal David. That's my man. Hal David is so fucking dope. He comes up with those lyrics, dude. What the fuck?
I know. I mean, it's funny when you really go back. This is obviously before you are born, but that type of like lyricism and songwriting. Obviously, there's some like 50s, 60s nonsense songs.
Yeah.
But there is some real holy crap, these are like wordsmiths. Next level stuff.
Poems, man. Poems set to music. That's what they should be like. You know, that's my... Okay, so I like a lot of modern music, but that's my one issue is I wish people would spend a little more time on the craft of the lyrics. Because I learned to write lyrics from a dude who's also... He was a big Silver Lake proponent, which Benji Hughes. I don't know if you know that guy's music. It's beautiful, man. He's probably... He's debatably the best living songwriter right today, but nobody really knows him, and I don't know why. Like, but he's... crazy. Check his lyrics, man. All right. Six. You're gonna love it if that's the thing you dig.
Yeah, I'd love that stuff. I mean, I love all that old stuff. I love the classic stuff, the romanticism behind it, where it's like,
me too.
Yeah,
me too.
It's great. So now that you Babes is done, you put out a couple albums, and you're working on your solo stuff now.
Yeah,
I mean, what made you, other than maybe de-stressing a little bit, what put Babes to bed and made you want to pick up the guitar by yourself?
Well, I like kind of had, okay, so two things. One, Babes, when I was in that band with my brother and sister, like we just kept going as long as people were like, we're interested. Like, here's some money, make a record. We were like, okay, we'll just keep doing it. And then, but the way that it went was we got a deal and then they wanted a certain sound, and I tried to, we worked with this one producer, and it didn't really, then they were like, no, your demos are better, so I redid it, and then they were like, yeah, but it's gotta be like this thing, so I was like, okay, I know what they wanted. Basically, they wanted what I do, but only the pop, only like the most poppy, like more up-tempo, more like.
So if you have a spectrum from like melancholy to like mid to pop,
exactly,
everything that's left to pop.
Exactly. See, yeah. They wanted, like, one time they said, the president said that we sounded like the Velvet Underground meets the Ronettes, and then he was saying, but do more Ronettes, and that was the thing, and I was like, I know what he's saying. So we tried that, and that's hard to write. That's really hard. Like, try to fucking write those songs, man. They are difficult, and, you know,
you don't
I'm
have
good,
a
but...
crazy man with a wall of sound behind you, you know what I mean?
Of course, man.
With, like, possibly a gun as well.
Well, he definitely
had a gun. Definitely had a wall of sound. Yeah, I mean, that's tough, you know, it's especially...
It gets boring, too.
As you were saying, if, you know, music to you... is this pure happiness.
Yeah.
And someone's like...
Exactly.
Someone's like...
See, you get it, man.
And I get it. Like, you can't always be the artist you want to be, especially, as you said, with the business side of it. But if someone's saying, like, I can't even let you start at being an artist because we have this idea of who we think you should be.
Yeah, yeah. It's, that's like... And they did hold up our record for a while because of that. And
dicks.
Yeah, total dicks, man. Like, you know, I don't know. Like, it's tough to meet someone that works in the music business on the business side who is cool, man. They're all weird. I don't know. Like, Aaron's pretty cool.
Aaron's cool. He's shout really out Danger cool. Bird. Andy's cool.
He's a cool dude, and because he knows he's a musician. He makes music, so he knows what it takes.
Yeah,
but, like,
I mean,
most of them are they're fucked up. And
but it's just harder now because it's like every album. There's no room for error.
Yeah, you're right.
There's no room for error. Yeah. And, like, there's no R&D. There's no, like, let's take a chance. It's, like, even your chances can't really be, like, your chance is, like, okay, you're not Beyonce, so you're a chance.
Yeah. You know what I mean? And that's the way they look at it. And it's a really, it's not a cool thing, man, because I think of this, like, how many, like, great songs are we missing out on because these people are like, we have zero chances, we cannot miss, so they just like they pass on really amazing songs, really amazing people for something that they think you want.
Yeah, that's what it is.
Gross, dude.
Yeah,
that's
it's not even
come
like
now.
It's not even like we think it's good. It's we'll think it's it will sell.
We think that this is we're pretty sure this is what you want, and we don't even fucking know. That's why So now to circle back to what you were saying was, the answer is I'm doing this now because I sat down and I just went, I don't fucking give a shit anymore.
So many great, things have started with some version of that sentiment.
It felt good, dude. That's why I did it, because I was like, I don't fucking care, and I'm just going to do what makes me feel something, because more and more I wake up every day and I feel less and less, and that makes me really sad, dude. I don't know what that is, but like, so doing this has been pulling me the other way, and it means a lot to me. So the fact that anybody, I was like, I don't care if one fucking person listens to it and they're like, that means something to me, I'll be okay. But it's been kind of the opposite, that people are sort of slowly, you know, tuning in and going like, this is a vibe that I get down with. And I love that, because like, I played this show the other day with this young Hispanic dude, Katsu Oso, who's so dope. Oh, yeah. He's so good, man. I love his shit. And I met all these young people when we just were having a good time and talking about like sensitive boy shit, sensitive boys, sensitive music, like, you know, not wanting, like, you know, whatever. I'm not going to say like any bands, but like, you know, like, we're not trying to like always turn up. We're turning down, man.
Yeah.
Turn down. Like, I don't want to fucking hear that noise. Like, I want someone to tell me something beautiful, because I don't know what the other, what else is there really?
Yeah, just some stuff. Well, speaking of beautiful stuff, we're going to hear, what's the next song you're going to play?
We're going to play Alone Together.
Okay, well, here we go. Billy Womo, Alone Together, Danger Bird Record Studio, on Snacky Tunes on heritageradionetwork.org.
I've been real lonely, real lonely, yeah, yeah. I'm calling you up on the phone, hello, 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 to know if you're lonely like me. We don't wanna be
such a long time.
That's some beautiful stuff.
Thank you.
Now, I know that you mentioned you're playing with a young Hispanic band, and what I had heard is that, like, you're sort of getting into this, you know, East LA Hispanic community, which has a big love for guys like Morrissey and things like that, and your vibe of sensitive music is sort of tapping into that.
Yeah, I mean, you know, I definitely, that's, if I do get accepted by that community to any degree, I'm super happy because that's sort of what, that's sort of like where I grew up.
By the way, those
up.
People's bullshit meters are dialed up to like 11. But you know what I mean? You know what I mean?
Yeah,
the door with that?
I think that makes sense to me. I mean, like, it's, you know, like, you can go to the whiskey or whatever, and that's just all bullshit. Like, it's just nothing. There's
Does anyone
nothing,
still go to the whiskey? Who goes
I don't
to the
know, or the Roxy. I don't go over there anymore.
And if we,
I never
just,
did,
if we just lost
did.
Our potential sponsorship with the whiskey, I'm okay with that.
Oh, shit, my bad.
No, it's okay. They don't know us.
But yeah, like, I don't, you know, it's not, I think that any, they just like either good vibes, like good dance. It's also about fucking danceability too.
Oh, yeah.
Me, like, can you dance to it? Because I can't dance to an Imagine Dragons song. I don't even know how do you do. How would you even do that?
But like, do you have people doing like slow dances to your song?
Not slow dances. They're not dancing to my shit as much. Like, I'm even slower than these guys. But that's why I was like,
there's some swang, some like swang.
Yeah, definitely, definitely. I mean, you could, you know, do you like grab your girl and like.
Yeah, you can grab a girl. Do the thing where like she's in front of you and you hold her from behind a little sway.
See, you know. That's what I was. I didn't know how to describe that exactly.
I know,
that's what I was thinking, but thank you for.
I went to a couple shows. You know, I got my. She's got her hands in the pockets of my cardigan.
Yeah, that's what I want. Yeah. See, that's what I'm trying to do. I don't want, like, I don't, I'm not trying to, like, you know, whatever, Slipknot people or whatever.
I mean,
like,
look. Right time, right place for that.
Totally, man. Nothing wrong with that.
Nothing
I
wrong.
I could dig that.
Nothing
wrong.
Like, so you are working on a run of EPs right now, right?
Yeah, I'm doing...
You have two out?
I got two out now. I'm doing my third. It's called All Trash, No Love. And it's cool. I like it. It's going to be good. And I'm doing 10 four-song EPs. I just wanted to be this series. And like, I just, you know, keeping in line with just doing what I want. I like little pretty things. So I was thinking, like, I just want to look at the end. I want to see like 10 little covers. They all look the same.
Yeah.
My friend Jessica is making them. She does the artwork. Like, I show her what I want. And she does the artwork. And it's just going to be this really beautiful little thing. Like, when you listen to it, each album, each EP has its own little story that kind of it's all concepts,
right? So each little one's its own little one, and then all 10 together will be a larger arc.
Yeah, like it should be it should have like some kind of
it's arc, on the record, but... now, man, you better do it.
No, I mean, like, that is more, that will end up being more abstract.
I'm
dude.
Kidding, I'm not putting that pressure on
that's
you.
A lot. Yeah, no I'm already, you know,
you know,
like...
the way that we really see you is this like big opus storyteller. And what we would
man, it's like, who the fuck am I, Bob Dylan? Like,
So the first one is Wasted.
Yeah, which is just like the story of a relationship. It's just like you get together, you dig each other, you know, then you break up, and then you kind of reflect on that shit in a terrible way. Like, it's just that whole...
Is there any sweet to your sour? Like, is there some happiness in there?
Yeah.
I'm not saying that there has to be. Like,
sure.
You could be melancholy all
day. No, there is.
Because sometimes that sadness is extra super sad when you have a little, like, the hope of happiness.
Yeah.
That's like, oh,
of course. Yeah. No, you got to have that. Like, okay, so I got on my... I haven't decided yet. There's two songs that I'm vacillating on. That might end up on the fourth one, but it might be on this All Trash, No Love. It kind of depends on where I go lyrically. But there's two songs that's called Right Here in My Arms, and there's another song called... I already have all these songs written, but it's called Right Here in My Arms, and the other one is called... Which is just about, like, you know, you feel sad, and it's like, that's okay, because I love you, and you come here, and in my arms is where you're gonna find love. But then the other one that's nice is called I want to live in a world where dreams come true.
Okay.
So yeah, like that's like more.
There's hope.
Yeah.
A lot of hope.
That's when I like Irving Berlin shit.
Oh, yeah. That is that like grandiose.
Yeah, just like straight up, very literal. Very literal. Like.
And for your recording, is it just all you? Or are you bringing in the band? Or
well, I bring in my people because like, you know, David, for instance, he's the guitarist and he's better than I'll ever be. I could practice for 10 years. I'll never be as good as him. So like I do write it all and I know what I want, but.
And you're like, go shred this.
Yeah, exactly. I'm not going to fucking, look, man, it's taken me a while, but I know who I am. I know what I'm good at and I know what I'm not. Like, and this dude
That's the toughest part.
Yeah, totally. It is.
It's easy to be like, I'm not good at that.
Yeah.
And then the flip is the confidence to be like, I'm actually good at this other part.
Yeah, that's hard. That's hard for people.
That's harder.
People are. I'm an asshole too. Like I will. Like I. You have to. I have to quell my ego and be like, you know, that's. You're not good at that. Like,
yeah.
But that's not easy to do. That's not easy for people to. We're fucking. It's like that's survival, man. That's the universe pushing you to say that shit. We will die out if you don't say I fucking do it. Like.
Yeah. No, it's also tough. I mean, especially in making music or creating anything where you need other people.
Yeah.
You know, tree in the forest type of thing, but
right.
You need people to listen as well. And if you're just a dick the whole time, people are going to want to come around to be part of your band or listen to your music or like hang out with you and have a taco. Like you gotta have it. But sometimes people like that, like sensitive guy with the, you know, the,
yeah,
like, ooh, it's like, we were talking about, hey guy.
Yeah. Right. Right. But
guy?
People get, you gotta watch out. People get sick of that shit real fast.
What are you into? What are you into?
What
are you into, man? I don't know. Well, listen, man, thank you so much for coming by.
Yeah.
I want to make sure we have enough time for one more song, but I want to make sure that people can find you online, everything. So where can people get the EPs?
Yeah, I got my EPs are all on Spotify and whatever, all that stuff. And they're
spell
on iTunes.
Spell your name just because they can't see it all.
Cool. Yeah. Billy UOMO.
Okay.
Cuomo. And then, so I'm on the Spotify, I'm on the whatever Tidal, if you do that.
Tidal? And by the way, if Jay-Z. That just lost us our Tidal sponsorship, I don't care, because no one's listening. Literally,
hey, that was on you, man.
Literally, I think the only reason why Tidal exists,
yeah.
So for that one day,
yeah.
You can listen to a Beyonce or Jay-Z album
before everyone
else. And even this time, they didn't even hold out as long. Like, new album popped up on Spotify a lot faster.
Yeah, because I think they're losing like the streaming battle, but that's okay, whatever, man.
Oh, wait, before we go.
Yeah. Oh, check my, if you want to get like the EP though, like a physical or whatever, just Instagram me, because I don't really do it that much, but I write people back because it's, you know, it's funny.
It's nice.
Yeah.
But before I forget, the Babes Hotline.
Yeah.
Which you're supposed to call if you're sad or and... Horn.
Yeah.
What was, does the Babes Hotline still exist?
No, it's defunct now, but it was, you know, we were on the road and just like, we thought it was fun.
That's a great way to have people, like just any entertainment.
Yeah, and you know, people call us and be like, we're driving to like Portland and we're almost there. Like, oh, we're waiting for you at the show, blah, blah, blah.
Nice.
Like, yeah, you know, some people call and be like creeps and that's funny too.
Yeah.
We would record it all and listen back and it was hilarious.
But those type of calls get you through that last like hour and a half of driving.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Totally,
were people more sad or horny? Probably a little bit of both.
I mean, okay, the thing that happened the most was people would call up and say, is this the Babes Hotline? And then they go, we'd say, yeah. And then they would go, and they'd hang up.
Huh. Okay.
Because they just were like, you know, I think like, people get nervous.
Well, I think also because it's like, did they really put a hotline?
Yeah, they just were checking.
Yeah, that's checking.
But they're just, but people, you know, I think people, a lot of people are shy. It's just a fucking phone call, man. It's just a phone call.
But there's no anonymity. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Come on.
Well, no, because their number pops up, right?
Oh, I don't know. I don't even look at that stuff anymore.
All right. Well, what's the last track that we got?
True Love.
Story behind this?
It's just the truth. It's just what I can't live in this world if I don't have true love.
Ain't that beautiful? Well, thank you, man. I appreciate it. Thank you to Danger Bird Records.
Thank you.
Thank you to everyone. We'll be back next week. And here we go. Billy Womo, Snacky Tunes, HeritageRadioNetwork.org. See you next time.
talk about food, we talk about music, with musical dudes, finger on the pulse, snacky tunes.
This program is powered by Simplecast.
Thanks for listening to Heritage Radio Network, food radio supported by you. For our freshest content and to hear about exclusive events, subscribe to our newsletter. Enter your email at the bottom of our website, heritageradionetwork.org. Connect with us on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter at heritage_radio. Heritage Radio Network is a nonprofit organization driving conversations to make the world a better, fairer, more delicious place. And we couldn't do it without support from listeners like you. Want to be a part of the food world's most innovative community? Rate the shows you like, tell your friends, and please join our community by becoming a member. Just click on the beating heart at the top right of our homepage.
Hey everybody, I'm Nick Latham.
And I'm Leah Bonema.
And we're the hosts of Were You Raised by Wolves?
Each week we try to make the world a kinder, nicer place.
Well, that's the idea at least.
I mean, we try.
Have you ever wondered what to do if you're ghosted?
Or what to do when a friend asks you to borrow money?
Or the proper way to eat Cheetos?
You know, the big questions.
So please find Were You Raised by Wolves wherever you listen.